This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
To offend the public, because they want as many viewers as possible, then more change is possible.
Again, I've been speaking to Evelyn Olsultani, author of the book Arabs and Muslims in the Media, Race and Representation After 9/11. For KBOO's Radio Zine, this is Jennifer Kemp. Thanks so much, Evelyn.
Thanks, Jennifer.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
One, two.
KBOO Radio is proud to help sponsor the Portland Old Time Music Gathering, taking place from January 16th through January 20th at various venues across Portland. The Portland, Oregon Old Time Music Gathering is a grassroots, volunteer-run festival that aims to celebrate and enrich the community of traditional, old-time Appalachian-style string band musicians. A list of performers, locations, and more information can be found at kboo.fm/2013oldtime.
And now KBOO's Jenka Soderberg speaks with Sincere Shakur, who is helping to organize relief efforts in Far Rockaway in Queens, New York, where 10,000 people remain without power.
I'm speaking now with Sincere Shakur, who is an organizer with Occupy Sandy. It's been almost 3 months now since Hurricane Sandy hit the coast of New York and New Jersey. What are some of the ongoing impacts for people in particularly Far Rockaway and some of the outer areas in New York?
The biggest problem that I see right now is rented homes and rented apartments. You have landlords, of course, you know, that won't go in and do reconstruction on the house. So the families don't have any place else to go. So the mold, the black mold that's growing from, the home or the apartment from being flooded from Sandy is growing all over the place. And you have children and their parents who are having lung conditions where they can't breathe. And maybe about 6 weeks ago, you had children actually throwing up blood from the same illness. And there has been reports that on any given corner, any point in time, someone could be throwing up. And it comes from inhaling that mold constantly all day. And also, there's 10,000 residents here that are still living without power and running water. So, you know, they're living kind of like in caves because it's been really cold here within the last couple of weeks. And that's about the biggest thing. And, of course, Red Cross has determined, along with other supply lines, that these communities no longer need, so we're cutting you off, and that's it. And but I'm still working with City Harvest, which is enabling me to still bring food to affected areas, and that's only for maybe another week or two.
Wow, so these families are being left in the lurch without support. Are people who have lost their homes or whose homes are unlivable being also left without support?
Pretty much. I mean, the thing about that they're finding they're giving people hotels, they're increasing food stamps and all this type of thing. But you know, when you got that many people in need of a place to stay, the hotels are packed, you know, and so that's not really a good thing. At least in New Orleans, you know, at least we had an exodus. At least we had people that left. Here is a lot more difficult because you can't just go in and gut houses. like 90 going north. You have to you have to sit there and watch families go through this stuff. You know, I never imagined that in an American city, especially in a major city like New York, that people would be forced to live in those type of conditions. I would have never imagined that ever in my life.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, if you see some parallels between what happened in New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina and what's happening in New York now with the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy.
Well, the first thing that jumps out, there isn't any vigilante groups running around murdering people. You don't have police that's doing that, and you don't have the military that's doing that like we have in New Orleans. But that aside, the same gentrification tactics that they used in New Orleans, they're using here too. I mean, you got to imagine, you know, folks that's listening, you have poor people who are basically in Far Rockaway off of Beach Channel Drive, are basically living on beachfront property, you know, and they're like being, they're being forced out by, you know, being ignored. And people are leaving. They're packing up and they're leaving, which is an activist, which is kind of sad for myself, because I don't, you know, it makes me feel like I'm not moving fast enough, making things happen fast enough to keep them there. You know, but it seems like they a lot of people are giving up and just moving out of Rockaway altogether, which basically is playing into the hands of the people that bringing the gentrification in. You know, so that's it's a really sad thing to watch. You know, at least we were able to save a lot of neighborhoods in New Orleans and surrounding New Orleans area. But the way things are going here, it may seem like if things don't change within the next couple of weeks, that Bloomberg and the rest of the clowns with him will have their way and be able to take that beachfront property. You can see definitely like racial disparities. You go all the way up to the 100s, and you got warming tents. I mean, like major productions, warming tents, food being fixed, security, all this type of thing, you know, and electricity. I mean, it's just like, it's awesome. It's an awesome thing to see. But you go on the other end where, you know, poor black and Latino people and white people live, Bloomberg is blocking not only the warming centers from being placed there, but also the trailers as well.
There has been some hostility towards the Occupy Sandy in Staten Island, Occupy Sandy relief efforts. The center was evicted by the police, and there was an arson also at a church in Brooklyn that had served as an Occupy Sandy hub. Have you experienced any of the hostility or outright attacks on the relief efforts?
I have been fortunate that I haven't, not directly. As far as the church, St. Matthew's, pretty much I believe that was just someone who wasn't in their right mind that did that. The police had made an arrest like within 48 hours. You know, this guy wasn't mentally wrapped too tight. But as far as like Coney Island, I haven't heard anything out there about what's going on out in Coney Island just yet. That's like, you know, that's news to me. But that's horrifying to hear too, that they're actually going to be stepping it up. And that's what's going to be happening. I believe that's what's going to be happening to all the other hubs too. The longer we stay, the more effective we are. There are going to be attempts to push us out. But they have been doing stuff like that, I mean, basically since Sandy's been here. I think they had problems over at the Yana location where police were banging on the door, harassing them in the middle of the night, trying to evict them, you know, in early morning, which is, like, really crazy.
Has the relief effort been like in New Orleans? There was a focus on solidarity, not charity, and having people become politically active and gaining their voice in order to affect political change. These are people who were disenfranchised to begin with. Is there an effort like that going on with Occupy Sandy?
Yes, there is. There has been, at least In Far Rockaway, there have been weekly meetings with the residents and assisting them and organizing their efforts to show, you know, the local and federal government, you know, their grievances. I think the biggest problem is there's so many things going on in the United States. All the really good people are stretched so thin, you know, that I believe that we're soon be facing, like, burnout. I haven't seen people come from other places, like in New Orleans, and come here and step in and take over the work. The folks that that started out in Occupy Sandy in November, they're still here, but they're very tired. They're very tired, and you know, and they need a break. But it doesn't seem like there are enough people coming in to help out and push the agenda forward. And that's the thing that I'm scared of. That, you know, we have the infrastructure in place, but how long can we emotionally keep it in place without outside help, you know, like immediately?
Is there a call then for people to come from places like Portland to New York to help out with Occupy Sandy?
I don't believe that there's. I mean, it's the network is funny because it's not like an organization, so there may be someone working on it, and nobody else really knows, but I haven't seen anything like that at all. I'm rebooting things in Far Rockaway. I'm reaching out to colleges to come in contact with me to help me gut people's homes in Rockaway. There's still homes here that haven't been gutted, and also, too, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, I have acquired the recipe for EM, and I am brewing that now in the kitchen, and we plan on making that a part of our gutting effort. But we definitely need more people on the ground, you know, from different colleges, wherever they may come from. We definitely need transportation. We don't have efficient transportation with 8 hubs, and we definitely need volunteer housing for your short and long term volunteers. You know, those are 3 things that I think that will help you know, get us over the long run, especially for the next 4 or 5 months.
So it looks like if people are interested, if listeners want to get involved in helping with Occupy Sandy, you can go to interoccupy.net. There's a hub for Occupy Sandy. That's interoccupy.net. And do you know if there are any other online locations that people should go to, Son?
Well, they can actually call me direct if I can give my telephone number out. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay, you can call me at 828-367-8525. I'm heading up, you know, the effort in Far Rockaway. We're gonna have a mold remediation program along with a house gutting program. And today I just met with a group with 2 youth groups where we'll be supplying a children's free breakfast program there too. You know, that's my thing. Everywhere I go, I gotta set one up.
That's great.
Yeah,
and I guess
things are moving along. We just need boots on the ground, you know, on a consistent basis, you know, to really, because if it doesn't happen within the next 30 days, Bloomberg is one, hands down. We really, really need people to save these people's homes. You know, I am, like, really emotionally hurt, because I talk to people and they're saying their babies are screaming at night, you know, because they're so cold, you know, because conditions haven't changed here. And it's a little rough. It's a little rough. And if we could get the proper help, you know, we could really knock this thing out of the ballpark and we could really save people's homes. But, you know, we just don't have enough people from out of town coming in and helping out, and understandably so, because there's so many things going on across the United States. But if, you know, if people have some time, they can come down for 2-3 days or longer than that, because I made a 5-month commitment myself. to helping out, that would be, like, really awesome, really awesome. And once again, you guys can call me at 828-367-8525 and ask for Sincere or Sunny.
Wow. And so is there any promise from the utilities to turn the electricity back on, or does it seem like they want to keep the electricity off in order to push people out of these homes?
They are not doing anything to help anybody. They are definitely shutting down everything to push people out of their homes. It's maddening. Bloomberg is extremely powerful here. He has a lot of influence, you know. And, he's basically getting his way, which is sad, you know. And they're not getting any help, and they are refusing to cut power on. I think utility companies in December had told people that it's possible that the power could be cut on by the end of the month. Possible. And it wasn't cut on by the end of the month. We brought in a new year with still 10,000 people basically living in modern-day caves, you know, in their homes, which is extremely heartbreaking. It's extremely heartbreaking because it's really, really cold out here.
I mean, if you listen to Mayor Bloomberg, it seems like the city is recovering fine. We just need federal support, and then we'll be okay. But he doesn't mention the people in the Far Rockaways without power.
Right, right. He like I said before, he's not going to do anything. You know, he's too busy, you know, helping his banker buddies out, you know, by destroying and breaking up these people's community, you know, and pushing them out. I mean, there's absolutely nothing being done, you know. And FEMA is really no good to us because we have to get permission basically from, you know, the public officials in order to get services from FEMA. And not only that, FEMA was packing up the week of Christmas. They've been gone. They're not here anymore. And Red Cross is hanging in there. They're not making as many rounds as they used to. They're hanging in there. But, you know, they're going to be scaling back, too. You know, and, it's sad. Because I go to the 40s Project on Beach Channel Drive, and people are still hungry. People still need things. You know, people still don't have electricity in this building. You know, they need heaters. They don't have heat, adequate heat. You know, and the electricity cuts off, you know, at any point in time, you know, without people knowing exactly when it's going to get cut back on. You know, they're definitely being pushed out. You know, and Occupy Sandy is doing what they can, but I think I'd be, like I said before, you know, to be intellectually honest, we need more people. We need more people with energy that can step in and help us push this agenda, because I fear that, you know, if we don't get that help, no matter what type of infrastructure we have in place, you know, it's not looking good, you know, if we don't get some fresh boots on the ground.
So if people are interested in getting involved and helping with Occupy Sandy, you can go to interoccupy.net. There is a hub for Occupy Sandy, or call Sincere Shakur, who we've been speaking with from Far Rockaway. His phone number, 828-367-8525. Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Sincere. And,
no problem. Thank you, guys. Thank you so very much, because, you know, it's so important, you know, to do this interview, and I thank you so very much for calling and setting this up, because once again, you know, what's going on here is being blocked out of the media, you know, and I think that's largely the reason why people really aren't up to par what's going on, because of the media blocking. So, you know, I thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I'm sure the people here in New York, you know, that are in the affected areas, really appreciate, you know, you taking the time to do this interview.
Well, thanks again. And hopefully people listening will get involved. Remember, it's just not quite 3 months since Hurricane Sandy. People are still suffering in many parts of New York. Thanks for joining us, Sincere Shakur.
All right, guys. Thank you.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
On Wednesday, January 16th, KABU will broadcast the talk by Michelle Alexander on the new Jim Crow, racism and the criminal justice system, along with a community forum on police and the Portland community. Listen to the talk live on KABU Radio from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. this coming Wednesday on 90.7 FM and also heard on the web at kabu.fm.
And get together, break up this old Jim Crow. Break it up now.
This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. The New York Committee for Occupational Safety and Health, NICOSH, is demanding employers and government agencies respond to the massive health and safety violations thousands of cleanup workers face in the wake of Sandy, so as not to repeat the 9/11 fiasco, which continues to cost the lives of first responders. Why don't we begin by really expounding on the kind of hazards that these workers faced, most of whom were, I believe, signed up to do the cleanup by FEMA, and then we think were subcontracted, or FEMA subcontracted them out. But what are the kind of conditions that we're referring to, Joel?
Well, the types of hazards that workers face, and I should say, and volunteers face, are a wide range of safety and health hazards. There are safety hazards that come from working on debris piles of unstable materials. There are workers who are trimming trees and using chainsaws, chipper machines. People are working with portable generators, which can give off carbon monoxide and other toxic substances. But the health hazards that people face are also very significant, and those are dealing with things like mold, asbestos, lead, silica. They are also exposed to sewage in the flooded waters, which is contaminated. We're talking about just a huge range of hazards, and we're talking about an area which extended about 800 miles and encompassed about 16 states. So we're talking about a wide area that's been devastated and will take a long time to come back to normal.
Now, in the 9/11 experience, the regulations were relaxed for a long period of time, which is why we had a lot of injuries and even deaths after that experience. Is a similar experience happening now? Are the regulations up to task, and are they being forced by OSHA and in the public sector by PESH?
What is OSHA and PESH, Ken?
Maybe Joel will do that.
Okay.
Well, the agencies which regulate safety and health is the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA. And if you're a public sector worker, you are in New York, you are governed by the Public Employee Safety and Health Division of the New York State Department of Labor. And after 9/11, the agencies suspended enforcement of their regulations, went into voluntary compliance or compliance assistance mode. And that meant that while the regulations were still there, the agency was not issuing first instance citations. That became, and you can understand perhaps that for, the first few days of a disaster, but after 5 days, 6 days, at the most, that becomes unnecessary in terms of doing being involved in rescue operations. At the World Trade Center site, it stayed in operation for 9 months until the job was done. And we believe that that had something to do with why workers became ill, the large number of workers became ill. That policy was then made permanent for all disasters. And OSHA then now in the case of disasters relaxes its its enforcement. It maintains the standards in place. And we saw that in Katrina. We saw that here with Hurricane Sandy.
Luz Derry, I'd like to know what you're experiencing on the ground and the kind of organizing that you're doing relevant to these workers who are facing terrible health and safety violations.
Yes. So in addition to all the hazards that you already spoke about, mold, lead, silica, chemicals, asbestos, workplace violence, it's a great concern of us. And so most of our workers will not be trained properly by the employer. They will not be informed of hazards that they will be facing in a language that they understand.
Right. There's lots of immigrant workers, aren't there?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
There are a lot of immigrant workers in particular.
Yes, we have hundreds of immigrant documented and undocumented as well, workers who are responding to the cleanup efforts. And many of them, again, are not being provided with personal protective equipment and the same thing, wage theft. We've seen a lot. We receive a group of day laborers who are being picked up in the street corners at 6 a.m., taken to do the cleanup. Then they're picked up at about 11 p.m., and they're getting paid $100.
Disgraceful.
It is. And because of many subcontractors know the condition and the maybe immigration status of these workers, they take advantage of them. And, you know, and one of the things in workplace violence, one of the things that they do is they tell them, you say something and we will call up on immigration. It's something that they're using a lot against our immigrant workers.
Who do you know who actually is employing these workers? Is it FEMA directly or is it as I thought, perhaps FEMA subcontracting? And who are those subcontractors?
So it is not. Well, we have the workforce who they are providing information to employers. The employers come and they do subcontracting, and the subcontractor subcontracts someone else. So it goes really down the line.
Mm.
And there are being, let's say, a group of workers coming together and bringing other workers. So it's just not, it's not FEMA, it's not workforce, it's a group of subcontractors. Employment agencies usually take a lot of advantage of our immigrant workers. So we have hundreds of immigrant workers going to the employment agencies because they know that many times they will not be asked for a Social Security, but maybe taking an IT number or an IRS. So through the employment agencies, we're getting a lot of workers being employed.
I think that there are a wide range of employers who are hiring. I mean, and one of the things that I think is particularly of interest to people here in the city is that there are no reoccupancy standards. So you have a building which has been evacuated for 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks or more, and then the building owner says that it is clear and clean.
I really want to thank Luz Derry Geraldo from NICOSH, community outreach organizer and executive director of NICOSH, Joel Shufro, who's been on the case for a long time, as well he should be.
We ain't asking you to love us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 10 o'clock straight up. Coming up next is Air Cascadia with your host, Chris Andre.
KBOO is a proud media sponsor of the Fertile Ground Festival of New Works, presented by the Portland Area Theater Alliance from January 24th through February 3rd. Fertile Ground features 88 events with over 50 artists and companies, including Artist Repertory Theater, Portland Playhouse, and Polaris Dance, and dozens more. For a 10-day festival pass or ticket info, visit fertilegroundpdx.org or go to kboo.fm.
KBOO Radio is proud to help sponsor the Skanner Foundation's 27th Annual Martin Luther King Jr. Breakfast, Monday, January 21st at 8:30 a.m. This year, the breakfast and ceremony will be held at the Hilton Hotel's Grand Ballroom, 921 Southwest 6th Avenue in downtown Portland. This year's keynote speaker will be Dr. Irma McLaren, poet, anthropologist, and author, who will speak about Dr. King's legacy in the digital age. This breakfast also raises scholarship money for local high school students who are seeking higher education. Again, that's Monday, January 21st, 8:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. at the Hilton Hotel's Grand Ballroom, 921 Southwest 6th Avenue. More information can be found at kboo.fm/scannerbreakfast2013.